my friends. Clayton here. I believe we're on episode 48. I am in some creek. I forget the name of it. I can figure it out, but that's okay. Mill Creek, maybe? I think this is the Mill Creek Trail. So, last time we talked about principles of psychology and how there are principles in any field of the physical sciences as well, and there are also principles in psychology. And I don't feel like that's maybe recognized as well as it ought to be, because those principles are basically amount to the explanations we have for why we do what we do. Our aim is to understand psychology. Thank you for being here. It's my hope and prayer. Well, there's a really loud kid over there. Hope and prayer that you'll benefit from this, and that I will be enlightened enough to make this edifying and come closer to kind of the answers, I guess, that we're looking for. Understand the principles of psychology and how they relate to each other, how they work, how they explain how we do what we do and don't do what we should do, and dude, I don't know if you can hear that annoying kid. Don't worry, I'm walking in the other direction. Always a good strategy for when something provokes you, right? If you don't have to confront it. I could go beat up that kid, I guess, but no. So, principles of psychology, and I kind of said how there are so many of them, I feel a little overwhelmed. Talked about the ones behind cognitive behavioral psychology and psychodynamic theory and behaviorism, and that's just the tip of the iceberg. But they don't really, I don't feel like people are making a very good attempt at considering all the other ones, right? Talked about the parable of the blind men and the elephant. They all kind of observed one element of the elephant and kind of made a judgment about the whole elephant based on the element of the elephant, based on that. And of course, they were all wrong, though they each had a piece of the truth. That's how the theories of psychology are. They're basically all wrong, but they also all have a little piece of truth. But we don't have a holistic, anything really holistic that I know of. So, rather than kind of have the big pile of principles that I can think of, that ChatGPT can think of, and from there, try to organize them and see what ones are missing. That wouldn't be a bad maybe exercise, but what about taking it from zero, taking it from the basics and doing a little brainstorming ourselves and figuring out what makes people tick? You go to a psychology class in college, if that's what people do who study psychology, I guess, like I kind of did. I have a minor in psychology. And you hope to learn what makes you work, what makes other people work. And you, at least if you're like me, you come out of that experience being like, wait a minute, all I feel like I've learned is a bunch of theories and they don't really come together, and they're just different angles, and I don't feel like I really came out of my class. My class is understanding, really. Got some tidbits, yeah. But I don't want tidbits. I want to understand. I want to be able to observe somebody, maybe myself, and be able to break it down and analyze and be like, okay, this is happening. This is why that's happening. This is why that's happening. That's why you're doing that. This is what you need to do. This is exactly what you need to do or can do. A few options maybe. And okay, enough complaining about the world the way it is. Let's start with the basics. Okay, if you take a person and you want to know, well, what makes that person work? What do we want? What's basic motivations? I feel like it's a good idea to strip away the complexities and start with the most basic. So you might say a child, you know, before a child, you know, has gotten complicated with development of their self-reflection and self-consciousness and their knowledge of good and evil. Maybe before they have language and have learned how to, you know, put on a show or anything. They're just themselves. So a child, in my thinking, is kind of like a dog, right? People compare dogs to toddlers all the time. And a dog is just an animal. And so you could say, well, what makes an animal do what they do? Let's start with that for psychology before we get to humans, because they're just like us. They just don't know good and evil. Not accountable for that. And they're not self-reflective. Their brains may be even bigger than ours, depending on the animal you're talking about. But they don't have that capability. So, and before that, you could get to plants, I suppose. What's the psychology of a plant? What does a plant want, right? So we're going to brainstorm here a little bit. I hope I pray that I'll be, that this will be an edifying little discussion. Plant wants to grow, wants to thrive, wants to be, it wants to have joy in its own sphere, does it not? We can be kind to plants. We can have a love for plants. We don't have to, you know, kill them unnecessarily. They're living beings. They have spirits. And, you know, I don't know a lot about that. I don't know who does, but they do. And I guess there's the whole fungi kingdom, which isn't plants or animals. Its own kingdom. But, so maybe stepping up to the animal kingdom. Any insect, any animal, the Lord created them, placed them on this earth, and commanded them to multiply and to have joy, to be happy, right? So even animals, I mean, they, they have their appetites, they get hungry, they have their own, you know, sexual desires and at certain times, and they have their instincts and everything, but they want to survive, they want to thrive, they want to be happy. They, you know, I don't know, I'm probably not delineating very well the things that drive them. But, you know, if you're familiar with dogs or have had a dog or a cat, they like affection. If it's a dog that likes, animals like love, I think they can love us, and they like positive attention, maybe a less defined way to say it. Anyway, so you might ask what drives an animal. So when we are children, we are kind of like a dog, right? Kind of like an animal. We are children of God. Don't get me wrong. We are the same species as God. And we have the potential, all the potential that God has. So I don't want to say, you know, suggest that we are on the same level of animals. It's totally different. We're gods. But we haven't achieved godhood yet. We have that potential, though. But we have the ability to know good from evil and be self-reflective. So when we're children, I've always wondered, those are cicadas, sorry about the noise, if it's objectionable. Pretty loud right here. My wife loves that sound, but it's maybe not the best thing on this recording. So I've always wondered, when children, we as children, mature a little bit and become older children, we become self-reflective. Before we're that, we are not self-conscious. It's kind of great, really. You don't care what anybody thinks. Of course, you don't like your mom or somebody getting mad at you, so you react to that, but you're still not self-conscious, which allows you to run around naked and not care. And it's wonderful and freeing when you're a kid. If you've ever seen a kid, you can sense their joy and everything. But, you know, you get a little older, that becomes awkward, as it should. Why? Because you're self-conscious. Why does that happen as you get older? I do not know. I've never understood that. And the thing I was going to say I've always wondered is, why does that happen kind of at the same time that you gain an understanding of good and evil? It seems like the two are tied together, and I don't know why. You also, you know, obviously as you develop self-consciousness and kind of self-reflection, which is kind of the ability, right, to see yourself from the outside, to kind of stand above yourself or beside yourself and look at yourself and imagine how you would appear to somebody else. You can talk to yourself. An animal can't do that, right? A dog doesn't know how he appears to anybody else. He's just, you know, happy-go-lucky, basically. Might not be happy-go-lucky all the time, but in that sense that he doesn't consider what somebody else is thinking of him. Of course, he reacts to a scolding or something like that, or to positive attention, obviously, but he's not thinking about himself like, oh, what do other people think of me? Or am I doing the right thing here? Just doesn't have that capacity. And that's okay. He's a dog. Or she's a dog. Or a cat. Or a cow. Or a whale. Or a fish. Or a bird. Or a fly. Or any other kind of animal. They are not self-reflective. And they don't know good from evil. And that's okay. They won't be held accountable for that. The last day, they will all be saved, as Joseph Smith taught. Yeah, so only as we learn good from evil do we develop the ability to self-deceive, right? Go against what we know to be right and justify ourselves for that, whether consciously or not. Probably not consciously. So what I haven't mentioned yet is that Adam and Eve are the kind of prime example which has been given to us in the scriptural account of people, and in this case they weren't children when they were placed in the Garden of Eden. They were adults. They could talk, but they were still not self-reflective. They weren't. You know how we know that? Because they were naked and they weren't ashamed. That is God telling us they were not self-reflective. They did not know good from evil at that time. Again, I don't know why their two go together, but I think they do. You can't look at yourself. You can't be accountable for yourself if you can't look at yourself from the outside and be like, oh, what I just did isn't right. You just can't do that. You can react to your surroundings and, you know, react to somebody scolding you, I guess. But you're really not able to be accountable if you can't be self-reflective. So Adam and Eve, for a child that happens kind of gradually, right? You get a little older, and I don't know how it happens. I don't know if that's something to do with the way the brain develops or kind of experience with doing stuff. I don't know how it happens with a child, but with Adam and Eve, we know how it happened exactly. They were given, you know, God placed them very specifically and very purposefully. Place them in a situation. So I talked about this in a little three-part series, the third part of which hasn't been published at this time, but called Evil is Kind of Great. And this amazing, great idea was put into effect where evil was brought into the world. It was made a possibility. And that just opened up all kinds of things. So evil was actually a great, great addition to the plan. Great part of the plan. It wasn't an addition. It was the original plan. A lot of people don't realize that, but it absolutely was. And a savior was in the original plan. Which made it okay that we sinned, as long as we repented. And that was just kind of a part of things. So Adam and Eve, as soon as they partook of the forbidden fruit, a situation which God, you know, totally set them up for. Here's a tree right here. You can eat everything, not this one. I'm going to go away. The tree was in the midst of the garden, like in the middle of the garden. Basically, you can eat it. I forbid you to, because, you know, but you've got your choice. All right, bye. I'm going to go away. You won't see me for a while. See you later. Oh, yeah, and there's the tree. See you later. And, you know, we know what happened. And they became self-conscious at the same time that they learned, had a knowledge of good and evil. And guess what? They realized that they were naked. They were like, whoa, we're naked. This is awkward. And they sewed some fig leaves, made aprons for themselves. And that was less awkward. And the same thing happens with children. As they gain, and we were all children, right? As we gain consciousness of good and evil, we realize that we're naked, and that becomes awkward. And so we start, of our own volition, keeping our clothes on, Our mom doesn't have to chase us down and put stuff on us. And then things get more complicated, right? When we become self-reflective and have the ability to kind of know whether we're doing right or wrong, then anytime we, you know, the principle of self-deception, anytime we go against what's right, and we all have that knowledge, it's in us, it's given to every man that comes into the world. As soon as we go against it, we justify ourselves. I don't know why, but we, from my observation, we basically do every time. Not basically, I think the theory is that we do every single time. We justify ourselves by changing the way we see the world, painting other people as bad to justify what we did or whatever we do. Not just paint other people as bad, but paint light for darkness and darkness for light and turn the whole world upside down and have all kinds of weird ideas about the world that are just very delusional. And some of them are accepted in society. Some of them are not. But whether they're accepted by the masses or not accepted by the masses doesn't make them any more or less right. With what, you know, there's, what's wrong is wrong, what's right is right, as far as truth goes, as far as understanding things as they really are. All right, well, I don't know if I'll keep this recording. It seems like it's loud, and I'm not sure I presented it in the most efficient, articulate way, but I guess we're going to stop here. Hopefully it's understandable to you that a good place to start for how humans behave and act is to look at a child, which is similar to looking at a member of the animal kingdom, and then going from there to their consciousness of good and evil and of themselves, as it were, and how we really have a long ways to go, I feel like, with understanding, you know, finding these principles from there. But hopefully that foundation is useful, and we'll call that good. You guys take care. Bye.